Good evening, New York, and the rest of our listeners around the globe. My name is June Stoyer, and I'm the host of the Organic View Radio Show. Our podcast is available on iTunes, Zune, and you can also visit our website, which is www.theorganicview.com. If you have any questions or would like to connect with us, you can simply post a question on our wall on Facebook, send a tweet to @TheOrganicView, or contact me directly at June Stoyer on Twitter. If you'd like to be on the show or would like to find out about sponsorship opportunities, please contact us at questions@TheOrganicView.com.
Today's show is sponsored by Austria's Finest Naturally Authentic Pumpkin Seeds and Pumpkin Seed Oil from the Steiermark, available at organicuniverse.com. Listeners of The Organic View can receive $1 off their purchase by using the coupon code ORGVIEW. That's ORGVIEW.
For other promotional offers, please visit TheOrganicView.com's website.
As we continue our special series called The Neonicotinoid View, which is the only radio show focused on the impact of neonicotinoids, my special guest co-host Tom Theobald and I will discuss this week's news, and we'll also be joined a little later on by Mr. Jim Doan, who is a New York beekeeper. And tonight we're going to be talking about two very interesting topics. The first is going to focus on industry's public relations efforts surrounding the use of neonicotinoids, and we're also going to continue the discussion about the announcement that PIMRA had made a little while ago. PIMRA is Canada's pest management regulatory agency. They announced that they feel that more investigation is needed about neonicotinoids. So we have a bunch of comments that we'd like to share with you. But first, I'd like to welcome to the show my special guest co-host, Tom Theobald. Good evening, Tom.
Good evening, June. It's nice to be back. It's been another interesting week.
It certainly has. And I would also like to welcome to the show Mr. Jim Doan. Jim, welcome to the show, and thanks for taking the time tonight.
Thank you, June, for having me.
Hi, Jim.
Hey, Tom. How are you?
I'm good.
Now, folks, for those of you that are not familiar with Mr. Doan, he was basically in the news quite a bit last year. He was the first known commercial migratory beekeeper to lose his operation due to neonicotinoid exposure. And the reason that I say the word known is because there are a lot of folks out there that have lost their businesses that have not been nearly as outspoken as Mr. Doan, but some of them just don't say a word. But this whole journey with watching many of these operations go under has been not only sad, but just heartbreaking. These are folks that have been in operation for generations. So, you know, we have a lot on the show tonight. But Tom, I want to begin by just briefly talking about this decision, this announcement, rather, with PIMRA. Now, you have some comments that were submitted by Tibor Szabo, who is the incoming president of the Ontario Beekeepers Association. Could you share some of those comments?
Well, it was very brief, and we talked about this announcement a little bit last week. PMRA characterizes itself as an understudy of the U.S. EPA, and that's not good news, I'm afraid, because the U.S. EPA has done everything they can to avoid the science and confuse the issue and not do what they should be doing to protect mankind and the environment. But nevertheless, what they issued was a report they called a value assessment. And this is the result of a reevaluation that began in 2012. So I guess we can assume that there was a prior evaluation. And this is just sort of an interim sort of thing. The actual interim report won't appear until late 2015. And sometime between now and then, they're going to issue what's called a consultation document. You know, this is one of the greatest environmental crises we have ever witnessed. And all of these agencies that are supposed to protect us from this very sort of thing seem to be determined to drag their feet, to drag this out as long as they can. And I think they're doing that as a result of the industry influence, which is to keep these things on the market until they've outlived their usefulness, and then we'll be confronted with a whole new family of chemicals.
Well, that seems to be the threat.
I asked Tibor if the Ontario Beekeepers had any more to add to this report, any comment, and what he did say, he said he's very busy and he has a lot of meetings to go to, and I'm sure, because Ontario has become a focus of activity on this issue. But what he did say was that one of the primary things that the PMRA failed to note was that 58% of the bees in Ontario were dead in the spring.
That's a bit of information that's not exactly something that you can quite avoid. So how do they manage that?
They just disregard it. They just ignore it. Well, I don't know. I guess PMRA should answer to that. I can't answer for them. I think they're all under very heavy industry influence, and we employ them to, in the United States and in Canada, to do the very things that they're not doing, which is to prevent these kinds of crises and to protect us from this sort of damage.
Jim, do you have any comments that you'd like to interject?
Well, I agree with Tom that the PMRA is under a lot of pressure, and the Canadian beekeepers that I speak with are very upset about the fact that the PMRA has not really dealt with the issue, and the fact that the studies have not been presented yet to show that this stuff is safe for use. And the losses continue to mount up there, and it's a huge problem that is occurring here in the U.S. too, that the studies are just not there to support that these chemicals continue to be on the market, and yet we continue to see more and more reports of that other dead insects, birds, fish that are changing, and water contamination, and no one seems to answer for all of these problems that we're seeing now.
Yes, indeed. Nobody does seem to want to answer for all the problems. They keep saying that it's colony collapse disorder. And Tom, do you care to interject about that lovely industry-made expression?
It's very interesting. Colony collapse was a working term that was created by the people who were looking into the problems way back in 2006 and before, simply so we could have a common term to talk back and forth about. And the industry quickly co-opted that, and it became colony collapse disorder, this great mysterious malady that we needed endless research to unwind, and it became a trash can, and unfortunately everybody fell into the terminology and talks about CCD and colony collapse disorder, when in fact it's simply one of many, many manifestations of poisoning by these systemic pesticides, the neonicotinoids primarily. Now, apparently it's outlived its usefulness for the industry, because just recently there was an article quoting David Fisher, who's the he's the environmental toxicologist and risk assessment director for Bayer.
Yeah, he's the director of pollinator safety, environmental safety, development and, North America for Bayer Crop Science. Yes.
And he said that the colony collapse disorder crisis is overblown. Well,
let's talk about that, because it seems as though this ties in with what's going on with their propaganda efforts. And it seems as though there's a rash of propaganda pieces that have been circulating from industry to denigrate, diffuse, and distort the science, the profession of beekeeping, and the efforts to raise awareness by concerned citizens. Now, we've seen a number of industry-paid reps, as you like to call them.
Sock puppets.
That have been popping up with greater frequency that have a, that, that command an assumed authority that they just don't have. Now, a lot of people are saying they're trying to divide and conquer. They are definitely confusing the public, and they're also confusing naive beekeepers. What do you think, Tom?
Oh, boy, I hate to keep beating this drum, and yet...
Keep beating it.
It's the most important thing there is. I've been speaking out about the toxic equivalents of these systemic pesticides. And I've used the figure of 20 to 30 billion pounds of toxic equivalents to DDT. The year of highest usage for DDT was 80 million pounds. We're talking 20 to 30 billion pounds. And just the other day, I found that that may be a dramatic underestimate of what the poisoning has been, because apparently 95% of the neonicotinoid use is for seed treatment, and the EPA does not consider seed treatment to be a pesticide use. So it never appears on the radar. So that 20 to 30 billion pounds may represent only a fraction of the actual poisoning that is going on. This is dramatic, terrible.
Now, I'd like to read the comment that was submitted for the White House's the White House's Pollinator Health Task Force, where they were accepting public comments, and this is from Dr. Fisher. And this is what it says, quote, "The campaign to ban neonicotinoid insecticides is misguided, and if successful, will result in billions of dollars of lost income to U.S. farmers and increase the exposure of honeybees and other pollinators to pesticides." Now, I just want to focus on that one sentence. Notice how the focal point is on money, not on the bees, not on the other species, but on the money. What's wrong with that picture right there, Tom?
Well, you know, we know that money is what drives the corporations, and they try to scare us with this threat that we'll go back to these horrible old chemicals. I've been a beekeeper long enough that I lived through those years, and I'm sure Jim has too. And as horrible as some of the effects could be, they didn't last for years. They lasted for hours, days, in some cases a couple of weeks. And while we might take a substantial hit from them, the bees could recover and produce a decent crop of honey. And they could do that because we had two things back then that we don't have now. We had an essentially healthy population of bees and a healthy environment. We have neither today.
Now, let me continue with his statement. And then, Jim, I'd like you to give your feedback, because I think your response really nailed this. Now, he goes on to write, "Use of a neonicotinoid soil or seed treatment replaces the need for multiple spray applications of foliar insecticides. The vast majority of pesticide-related bee kills have occurred as a result of foliar spraying. This is because residues in pollen and nectar of a treated plant are typically 1,000 times greater when a chemical is applied as a foliar spray. This difference is obvious when one reviews the results of surveys of pesticide residue levels in bee bread samples of commercial honeybee colonies. Neonicotinoids are among the least frequently detected compounds. Going back to spraying older insecticide chemistries such as organophosphates, carbamates, and synthetic pyrethroids will also result in greater risks to fish and wildlife. There is no evidence linking neonicotinoids to bee declines. Honeybee colony numbers in the U.S., according to the USDA NASS, declined from 6 million colonies at the end of World War II to 2.6 million colonies in the mid-1990s when the first neonicotinoid came out on the market. Since then, honeybee colony numbers have remained about the same, perhaps increasing slightly in the last 10 years. Thus, the decline in honeybee colony numbers occurred before neonicotinoids were introduced." And there's one more paragraph. "There is an ever-increasing need to maximize crop yields on our existing agricultural lands in order to feed a growing world population. Neonicotinoids have become the most widely used insecticide class because they are extremely effective at controlling pests, insects, that may significantly reduce crop yields. What we should be telling the White House is to instruct the EPA to stick to the science and conduct an objective review of the risks and benefits of neonicotinoid products as mandated by law. Jim, what is your response to this?
Did we lose Jim? I can respond.
No, Jim is here. Sorry about that. Jim?
Yeah. Dr. Fisher is so good at manipulating and playing with numbers, but the fact is that there is plenty of evidence that has been found linking bees and these chemicals. I mean, I had the highest number of thymotoxin in the nation at 39.6 parts per billion found in my bees. Part of the problem is the sampling. What we've seen is that a lot of the people that come out to pull samples, either they're inadequately prepared to pull samples, they don't bring ice to throw the samples in, they don't keep them out of UV light, and it's a known fact that this stuff breaks down very quickly in bees, but it's not breaking down in the ground, and we're seeing water samples that are coming back at 100 parts per billion, and fields that we're finding levels in a year later, 2 years later, 7 years later, that are enough there to lethally kill a beehive. And to say that there isn't statistical evidence is just an outright lie. There is plenty of evidence. You know, it just has, some of it has to be collected properly. You had a whole group of samples in Ohio that were thrown out several years ago because the guy stored them in a warm room, which completely made them worthless samples. This is the things that we're dealing with this. Another thing, June, is that as we can continue down Dr. Fisher's statement, he also said that bee populations have been shown in North Dakota and in Florida as being larger in the last couple of years. Well, the reason for that is beekeepers are hauling their bees to areas that they consider safe. And North Dakota was considered one of the safer areas to go because they had 4 million acres of land in the CRP program, which was the Conservation Reserve Program. A lot of that land has been taken out. And now what we're seeing is big, massive bee kills in the Midwest. They're talking about, from the guys that I've been speaking with in the Midwest, maybe up to 250,000 hives dead this fall. And a lot of them are in North and South Dakota. And in Florida, the reason there were so many bees is people are coming here because of the big drought that they had in California, the drought that they had in Texas. They were bringing their bees here to try to overwinter them and grow them a little bit because they couldn't do that in those spots. So Dr. Fisher uses statistics but doesn't show that in other places that actually the bee numbers have gone down dramatically because beekeepers just simply aren't going there anymore because they can't keep their bees alive.
That figure is a fiction in itself because the bees that we have at the end of the year are not the bees that we start at the beginning of the year with because beekeepers, in an effort to keep their numbers up, are splitting colonies and dividing them and recombining them. And for many commercial operations, the turnover in the course of the season may be 100%. And that fact is reflected by the most recent honey crops in the United States that have been the lowest since records began to be kept. We are in terrible shape here.
Now, it's interesting, Jim, you had a great response. I just want to quote you. This is a great example of how figures never lie, but liars figure.
Yes.
I thought that was very well said, Jim.
Yes, I find it very interesting every time I read anything Dr. Fisher says that he is very good at nitpicking out numbers, and unfortunately they use them improperly because they don't tell the whole truth.
Yeah, they'll resort to anything they can. The reason these neonicotinoids are the most widely used pesticides in history is not because they're particularly effective. In fact, there have been recent studies released, one of those by the EPA itself, that show that their contribution to yield improvement is negligible, if at all. They're the most widely used pesticides because they're very, very profitable. What we're talking about here is money, dollars.
Well, that's what he said in the beginning of his whole spiel. The campaign to ban neonicotinoid insecticides is misguided and, if successful, will result in billions of dollars of lost income to U.S. farmers and increase the exposure of honeybees and other pollinators to pesticides.
Well, to the contrary, it won't be lost income to the farmers necessarily, because it appears that farmers are paying a premium price for a technology that does nothing for them.
Well, the farmers do need people like Jim to certain farmers that rely upon honeybees to pollinate their crops are relying upon these beekeepers to head out there every season to pollinate the crops. Otherwise, they have no crop.
Right.
So why doesn't he include that it's going to be lost income, basically, if we have no bees?
Well, they cherry-pick the arguments.
And also, you have to remember, June, that specialty crops and apples and corn, or apples and almonds and oranges and crops like that, are not mainstream crops like corn, soybeans, cotton. Those people are the big industries, and they're the ones that are being told, if you don't have this material, you're going to go out of business, which is a blatant lie. And we've seen studies out of Purdue that show that in fact, farmers would make more money if they could get untreated seed and plant in the field, because now with all the genetic changes that they've made, the plant grows faster. A lot of the insects that would attack the plant at a young stage simply are not going to have an economic threshold that makes it viable to even treat for.
Jim, could you share with our listeners a little bit about your tenure as a commercial migratory beekeeper? When you first took over the operation, what was business like?
Well, you know, when I was growing up, we were producing 150, 160 pounds of honey per hive. We didn't even leave the state of New York because we were so profitable keeping bees there that it was unnecessary to leave. Later on, when tracheal mites first came around, then we decided that we needed to have a backup plan to cover the amount of bees that we were running. And it also was a good management practice for us to come to Florida, raise our own queens, and increase our bee population. But once we got into 2004, 2005, we suddenly started seeing the bees acting differently. And what I mean by acting differently was they weren't the things that bees normally do, like make queens and swarm and things like that. Suddenly the hives were unable to make a queen that was any good, or the hive would simply swarm and they would take only virgins with them, which just was not normal. And then we started seeing these huge reductions in honey production because our bees were just not in the hive. And you had smaller populations. And today what we see is if we keep our bees in areas where there's heavy neonic use, then our hives are small. They don't have the bee populations in them. They can't produce nearly the honey. And most of the hives die. And the truth is that we lose almost 100% of any hive that we keep in an area where there's continual neonic use in the summertime in New York State.
Yes, and we're seeing that scenario throughout the country, wherever these neonicotinoids are used. We're seeing it here in Colorado.
You know, I think the one thing, June, is New York probably, because of apples, and it started out with the Mid-Eclipperid one of the neonics that was used on apples, and then it, you know, we saw it moving to corn and soybeans, and so I think our exposure was a little bit sooner than some of the country. And to be honest, when I talked to beekeepers in the Midwest, they said, well, it just wasn't the corn grown here. They had no idea how much corn was being grown in New York State. And ethanol has done some of that because of the ethanol plants requiring so much corn. Farmers in New York State grew a lot more field corn. And then you had the economics of labor and all that. So a lot of people switched from growing vegetables, growing corn, because they don't need the labor to do it. A combine and a truck, and a planter, and you're in the corn business. And they didn't even need grain bins because they'd haul it right to the ethanol plant as they harvested it from the field. In the Midwest, it's a different scenario. The economics weren't there to start growing corn like it is the last couple of years, although this year they've seen a big decrease in the price of corn. But I don't, you know, they've all retooled themselves to grow corn and soybeans, so I don't see any change in the near future.
The reports are, though, that these systemic pesticides do not contribute to increased yields. It's a cost, and they can't buy untreated seed because the seed companies have been taken over by the chemical industry.
Oh, exactly, Tom. You're exactly right.
Now, I think it's interesting that part of his whole comment was the whole spiel about the growing world population, how we have this big need to feed this population that just keeps growing and growing and growing. And that's basically the whole argument for GMOs right there. And it's just interesting how we see this argument being used for every type of advanced technology when it comes to agriculture. And yet, it's interesting that regardless of how much science is out there, they're still insisting that there isn't enough.
I don't think that a chemically based agriculture is the only way to feed the world. In fact, it may be the worst way to feed the world.
I agree with you, Tom. I think it's unsustainable because they're destroying the soil. And that goes, the insects that live in the soil, the earthworms, and studies show that they are just destroying what is needed to grow the food. And so what happens 10 years from now? You know, when neonics are found to be a problem, you know, suddenly because they're in everything and people are getting sick, it just doesn't come out of the ground that fast.
No, it has half-life of years. In some cases, the longest they found was 19 years in Saskatchewan, and heavy clay, and California did a study where they couldn't even calculate the half-life because there was no deterioration of the chemical. Imidacloprid breaks down into substances which are even more toxic than the parent compound itself.
Exactly.
These are horrible poisons, and nobody seems to be prepared to face up to that, and I include Congress. Congress has done little or nothing in this case in the face of a serious, serious environmental and it's beginning to appear health crisis. Congress has done nothing.
Well, Tom, what do you expect when the main focal point is on this emphasis that billions of dollars of lost income to U.S. farmers? I mean, that emphasis on the money. Not to mention the fact that what it's doing to the soil, which would prohibit farmers from having healthy crops and having healthy soil. Without good, healthy soil, you can't grow anything.
Well, farmers are losing billions. It's just not
exactly as
obvious. They're losing the fertility of their soil. One of their most fundamental assets is being taken away from them by these chemical companies.
Yep.
Well, when they continue to dump tons and tons of these products, Tom, do you remember the statistics that you put together with the amount of product that's being dumped on U.S. soil each year?
Well, yeah, I mentioned that earlier. My calculation was that given the extreme toxicity of these products, 5,000 to 10,000 times more toxic than DDT, 80 million pounds was the year of highest usage of DDT. Today, the most recent figures we have for the neonicotinoids is 3.5 million pounds, which has the toxic equivalence of 20 to 30 billion. But what I said earlier was, it appears that what's being reported, that 3.5 million pounds represents only 5% of the actual usage. The other 95% is a seed treatment. The EPA does not consider that a pesticide use, so it never appears on the radar. How convenient is that for industry?
Well, the bottom line is that this is one train that's going to keep running as long as they can allow it to run, because it's a big moneymaker, period.
Well, as Jim said, it's not sustainable, and we're going to see some dramatic consequences of this high chemical input form of agriculture, and I think we're seeing it now, and we're going to see it in geometrically increasing proportions in the near future.
I agree, Tom. The other thing I want to point out is, you know, everything that I was taught growing up was to treat only when you had reached an economic threshold of damage. IPM, Integrated Pest Management. This was Integrated Pest Management. And beekeepers know from our experience with mites that if you use the same material all the time, it doesn't take long for the insect to build up a resistance to it. And all they're doing is building superbugs now. And they're already complaining. I've heard farmers, several of them, complain that the materials now on the seed treatment are not effective. And so the chemical companies are trying to register even stronger components. So you're putting out stronger drugs that are going to, insecticides that are going to kill more bees, more wildlife, and no one seems to care other than beekeepers and environmentalists that this is going on.
Well, unfortunately, this is going to keep going on until the public speaks out and until we get these chemicals banned. We've seen what's happened in Europe, and it's a shame that the United States is not taking the main lead on this, and we actually have to follow the European lead, which is not something that we typically do. We're usually the leaders with so many things. So this is pretty disappointing, but in any event, Jim, thank you so much for coming on the show tonight and sharing your thoughts with our listeners.
Thank you, June, for having me, and good luck, Tom, with your bees.
Thanks, Jim. You too.
And folks, thank you so much for tuning in. This has been June Stoyer with the Organic View Radio Show. Have a pleasant evening, everyone.